Blog Talk Radio.
Reasons Dana White sucks, go to the team take.
Makeover on YouTube. That's my boy, Mr. Motz, Man on the Street. He put together one of the best videos I've seen in a long time, bragging on Dana White. And it just so happened that he kind of used a good portion of my list when I did an article, 10 Reasons Why Dana White Sucks, or something like that, that I had on over on opposingviews.com. So definitely kudos goes out to Mr. Motz there. And check out his videos on the team. His handle is The Team Takeover on YouTube. So that way you get the... And it's also on our blog, on page 5 of our blog right now. It's hosted there, so that's the easiest way to find it. But anyway, this is rabble-rousing Rich Bergeron. Not as rabble-rousing as that guy, but hey, we'll see what we can do.
This is the Tornado Tony Pennycal. You guys know I loved that. It was funny, Rich, because right before we went on the air, we're sitting there saying, Ben and Aiden getting a black eye or something. I said, I'd like to give Dana White a black eye. I had no idea you were leading in with that. I was like, oh, that's perfect. I think my favorite of the top, 7 that we got, or the 4 through 7, was Richard Simmons 2.0. That was fucking great. I've already gone on to the video, and I'm already, favoriting it.
Yeah, that was good. I just kind of caught it by surprise the other night. And there's even pictures in there that I've used in my stories, so I know this guy's influenced by me. I actually hooked up with him on Skype, and we might be teaming up with Team Takeover and doing a little bit of an interview, because he's definitely on my wavelength. As I used to say in college, he's picking up what I'm throwing down, and he's smelling what I'm stepping in.
Yeah.
But, that's definitely a good watch. And, just like us with our R-rated show, he pulls no punches. So that's always nice. And it's kind of funny, too, that he mentioned blacklisting, because I don't know whether I was really blacklisted today, but we had a milestone today. Big milestone for Fight News Unlimited, because thanks to the big merger, I was able to get on a conference call for the UFC for the very first time in my whole Fight News Unlimited career, because the Strikeforce people had me on their list for PR, and they sent me like the next 10 conference calls. So of course, being the honest guy that I am, I told them who I was. And Dana White wasn't on the call, so he had nothing to do with it. But I think they had me on some kind of blacklist, because I tried to buzz in with questions about 3 or 4 times, and nobody would let me ask a question, even though other guys got to ask 2 or 3 questions. So I don't know whether that was just rookie hazing, or they had a list there, and they were like, oh, we can't let this guy ask. And I did notice there were a lot of softball questions. Nobody was getting controversial at all. And there was some openings for it. Rampage Jackson had said a couple things about going into the movies. And, somebody had asked him about talking about not training for this upcoming fight. And, it was very low key. It was low energy from a lot of these guys. There's only 4 guys on the call. But, I just kind of thought it was time for one of my questions. I wanted to shake things up. And my question would have been, for everybody. And I would have sort of asked, I just wonder if you guys think it's time for the UFC to offer $1 million paydays for the biggest main event fighters and fights. And just have them run with it. Which is, not the worst question I could ask being an expert on all this stuff that I've written about the backroom dealings at the UFC. But if you want to listen to the whole podcast without my questions, it's at fnu.mypodcast.com. And enough about UFC, enough about Dana White for a second. I would like to chat about a couple stories that come across the wire. We have a guy who used to be in the UFC, Hermes Franca. Two guys who used to be in the UFC, Hermes Franca and Rico Rodriguez, both got arrested in the last few days. One of them for a sexual assault on a female trainee, I think, at a gym. Let's see. 7 counts of sex abuse. He pleaded not guilty to the other day. Unlawful sexual penetration in the second degree, whatever the hell that means. His bail set at $250,000. He's taking a page right out of the book of that financial chief guy, I guess. I don't know the whole story. It's just brief here. But he was released today from Maximum Fighting Championships. And his record is 21-11. He made 11 appearances in the UFC. And he got released from there after UFC 103. And his big highlight was UFC 73 when he fought Sean Sherk for the lightweight title and lost by unanimous decision. So there's black guy number one that I was talking about earlier for MMA. Black guy number two is this Rico Rodriguez. Now, his story is kind of funny. He was busted for assault because after the cab driver billed him $75, he picked him up and slammed him. Concrete. So he's got busted on that. You know, kind of a cheapskate if you ask me. Doesn't want to pay his cab bill. But there's black eye number two for MMA, and just a few other interesting MMA stories. There's a little bit of an on again, off again injury bug going on with John Jones now. Now he says he doesn't need surgery, and he wants to fight Rashad Evans in October of this year. He apparently had a specialist look at his hand that he said he needed surgery on before, and he had to pull out of the fight for, and he had it wrapped up for a while, and he's going to take it easy with it, not use it for a while, and he says he should be ready by October. Now, Rashad Evans is still going to be fighting an interim fight with Phil Davis, but another interesting turn of events came about because the two of them had a face-to-face confrontation recently, and Rashad Evans came out and started talking about it. And apparently, what happened was they saw each other at a nightclub. John Jones came right up to him, and he said, I, there's a lot of stuff been going around back and forth. I just want to talk to you, you know. So he pulled him aside, and he said, I just want you to know that I'm going to destroy you. and then they started talking about how they got the better of each other in training, and basically, they had to be separated. But they still are definitely going to fight. The bad blood is there. It's just not going to happen in August like it was originally planned. But looks like October could be a go. All depends on whether Rashad Evans beats Phil Davis, who's, you know, sort of a carbon copy as far as build and height. John Jones is probably a little bit slimmer, more lean muscle than Phil Davis, but Phil Davis is a tall guy with unbelievable reach and more so wrestling than striking, but it's just going to be interesting to see what Rashad Evans does with him. I think he could beat him, but it's not going to be easy. And that's the fight that everybody's going to want to see because it's probably the most drama behind a fight that we've seen in a long time, probably since Rashad Page, I think, when they were talking back and forth. But other than that, and Kenny Florian is going to be dropping down to featherweight. for UFC 131. So look out for that. That's going to be one of the best fights, the best weights that we're going to see Kenny at in his career. I think he's going to do some great things. And unfortunately, though, it's also puts him in the title hunt with Jose Aldo and being a Boston guy. I don't know. Even with my Boston faith, I don't know if he can beat Jose Aldo, but he looks skinny at 155. So coming down to 145, which is the MMA featherweight weight, he's going to be dangerous. Other than that, we got some boxing news to talk about. Of course, we had the Super Six this past weekend, and Abraham got his butt whipped pretty badly by Andre. No surprise there.
Abraham's been figured out now. Ward pretty much dominated him from start to finish. The fight that really proved a lot about Abraham to me was his fight with Andre Durrell. Not Andre Durrell. I mean, Durrell was the first guy to really expose him and really, beat him. But what happened was, Durrell slipped, Abraham clocked him. So even though Durrell won by disqualification and had dominated most of the fight, he was still the guy that was pretty much carried out of the ring. It was Abraham's bad blood fight with Carl Froch that was really the telltale, because of the fact that, Froch, who's not considered an elite quote-unquote boxer, he's more of like an aggressive, war of attrition type fighter, boxed Abraham's ears off. And if Froch can box Abraham's ears off, Andre Ward, who was a very talented boxer, was going to do the same thing, if not much worse, and he did.
Yes, something that I really haven't been following. I don't know if you get a chance to answer the little poll that Iceman Scully put out there. And by the way, we're going to have Iceman John Scully back on the show next week.
Yes.
So you know.
One of my favorite guests.
He's ripped roaring and ready to go already. But he put out some post on, what do you think about the Super Six? You know, who do you think's going to win it? And I said, honestly, I really haven't followed it, I've obviously put stuff in the blog on it, but it's kind of like, touch and go. I don't really salivate over the prospect of seeing the next Super Six fight, because it's taken so damn long, number one. There's been so many different characters they've cycled through. Since the beginning, they've been throwing people out, so I just kind of lost interest. And obviously, there's the whole MMA thing, too, so I'm trying to balance boxing, MMA, and a little bit of wrestling. And it seems like I only see the big, big, big boxing matches unless I'm there in person, like the Friday night fights. But, it's something that I definitely keep an eye on every now and then. And I honestly said, even though I haven't watched it, I really want Glenn Johnson to win. I like the old guy, number one. And I just think he's in great shape for his age. He looks great. And I want him to win. I don't really think that Andre Ward has all of that great a character. I don't know the guy enough about the guy to talk trash about him or anything. But I think Glenn Johnson is just the better story. Hopefully he can win one for the older guys. And, that's what I wrote. And I also said that I don't think David Haye has the power or reach to beat Klitschko. That was his other question. Did you get to answer those for him?
I saw the email. I did not get a chance to answer them. I was planning to do that tonight. I definitely want to get that in because I like to make my opinion known, especially when it comes in, the wonderful world of boxing.
So who would be your pick to win the whole thing?
Super Six. I think right now you got to go with Andre Ward. The next fight's going to be interesting. If it's any less competitive than this past weekend's fight, it's really going to be dreadful. But the Froch and Johnson fight's going to be competitive. Frost is obviously the younger guy, the fresher guy. Johnson is the grizzled road warrior, as his nickname says, the road warrior. Johnson, he looked good in beating Alan Green, but his fight with Tavares Cloud before he got into the Super Six, you could tell he was a little softer on the middle. To come back on the super middleweight, so, I mean, obviously there was a little bit of extra padding at light heavyweight. So now we're going to see, what happens in that fight. I think it's going to be a rough and tough fight. I think Frotch's youth is what's going to carry him over the course of the fight. I can certainly see Johnson taking him out. But conventional wisdom, I lean towards Frotch by decision. And then going to the finals, I think Andre Ward is too good of a boxer for Carl Frotch. Jermaine Taylor had Frotch down and had him hurt bad. And Andre Ward's a lot better fighter than Jermaine Taylor is. Jermaine put him down. He hurt him. I mean, Frotch was hurt. And Jermaine, just like when he had Kelly Pavlik hurt. And just like, when he had some other guys on the ropes, he doesn't press the action anymore. And that's why Frotch ended up knocking him out. And I don't see Andre Ward making that mistake. I see Ward, just steadily pumping the jab in his face, quicker hands, better movement. I see Andre Ward over Carl Frotch in the finals.
All right.
Well, and if you want to go to Klitschko and Hay, let me weigh in on that, too, while I'm at it. First of all, I won't believe it until they get into the ring and they touch gloves. Then it's going to happen. Klitschko and Hay, I think Hay has picked the better Klitschko to go up against. As I've always said, the difference between Vladimir and Vitaly is, it's different, more of an attitude than anything, not as much as an ability. Vitaly is more of a stiff guy. He's not as fluid. He keeps his hands lower, but he's also a gunslinger. Vitaly's a guy that, he doesn't mind if you hit him. He's got a better chin. We're talking about a guy that's never been knocked down. I mean, and he took some bombs from Lennox Lewis, including a couple flush right hands and a couple flush uppercuts. Lewis didn't put him down. Lewis was 250 pounds. David Hay is sharp. He's a good boxer. He's, really, knocked a lot of guys out. But he was not able to topple the Russian giant Nikolai Valuev. He was able to beat him by decision, and he even buckled his knees a little bit. Wasn't able to finish the show. And that was the closest comparison that I've had. And the Vitaly Klitschko is, miles ahead of Nikolai Valuev. So I just made a comparison of the guy, the brother that he's not fighting. He's fighting Vladimir, and I see a positive and a negative in this for David Hay. The positive is he's fighting the brother that has, more chinks in the armor. We're talking about the guy that's been knocked out a couple times, the guy was on the canvas, I forget how many times, against Corey Sanders, 5 or 6, I don't remember, but he had him down a couple times. So we're talking about a guy that's also run out of gas in a couple fights, that was, flailing and just completely out of steam by 4 or 5 rounds. So we're looking at a guy that's not as, he doesn't have an iron chin, and he's run out of gas. And sometimes his confidence shows that. He shows hesitation on getting hit. And he shows hesitation in pressing the action. He'll be out there content, just to jab and paw and, kind of make it a sparring session. That's the positive for Hay. The negative for David Hay is we're looking at a fighter here that, is a very fluid fighter for a big man. For a guy that's 6'6" and 245 pounds, Vladimir Klitschko moves very well. He's got, a telephone pole for a jab. He uses his jab with a lot of versatility. He uses it to keep guys off. He uses it to press the action. He uses it to set up the right hand. And we're looking at a guy with more athletic ability than his older brother. So the positive for Hay is he's fighting the lesser confident and weaker chin of the brothers. The negative for Hay is he is fighting the better athlete. And probably, if you measure their punching power on that thing they used in Rocky IV, and they both played the part of Ivan Drago, I would bet that Vladimir would rate higher as a serious puncher.
Now he's got to go Rocky IV. We get involved. You know?
I know, I had to. I couldn't help it. But no, if they both used that thing that Ivan Drago was hitting and measuring like 1,850 pounds of pressure every inch, I think Vladimir would rate higher than Vitaly would. I see the fight having a few dicey moments for Klitschko, but overall, I see Klitschko's superior size outweighing him by nearly about 30 pounds and having, 4 or 5 inches in height. I see that being the ultimate difference.
Okay, well, then you don't even have to write an article now because you just wrote it in the last minute and a half or however long you went on there.
Well, I might write it anyway.
Well, but if you want to...
Iceman wasn't on. He needed to hear it.
If fans out there listening want to be part of the conversation, I haven't mentioned it yet, but we have a guest that's going to be coming on any minute. See how it works. This is the first time we're going to have a guest call in. So should be coming on any minute. I just want to introduce her. It's going to be Kat Zingano. She's 6-0 at 125. And in my opinion, I think she looks better than Gina Carano. So
wow.
She's got the dual package of beauty and brute force. And I think she's going to shake the division up a little bit. She's kind of stuck in Colorado at the moment, fighting on the local circuits. But she's fighting top 10 girls and women, I should say. And I think it's only a matter of time before she gets up to the strike force level. And maybe she will fight Gina Carano. Who knows? But she's going to be breaking in any minute now. And once she gets on, we'll obviously be asking her questions, but I don't want anybody to be surprised. What I also want to tell everybody...
I was going
to
be surprised.
If you go to unlimitedfightnews.com/WordPress, and you see the little bar at the bottom and the little chat thing, click on that. And you can connect through Facebook or Twitter, and then you can just chat your comments about the show right in the window there, if you are so inclined to be part of the conversation. But before we go any further, I do want to mention the fight coming up this weekend between another old guy, speaking of old guys and Glenn Johnson earlier, we have Bernard Hopkins, getting ready to break George Foreman's record for the oldest guy to have titles, right? World titles.
Yeah, to have won a world title. It's going to be tough. I know George is back to Hopkins. He believes in him. For the last 4 days, the Philadelphia Daily News has run articles on Bernard Hopkins every day about his training style, his workout regimen, his healthy lifestyle, his philosophies on life, some of his greatest fights. It's really been, and I'm glad that the Philadelphia Daily News and Bernard Fernandez, Bernard, I give you a double thumbs up on this, really giving some good coverage to boxing out there. I mean, it's great that they're, showing the respect to one of the true greats in boxing, one of the greatest of all time, to be honest. But what really concerns me about this fight is the same thing that I said 5 months ago when he climbed in the ring in Montreal the first time to fight John Pascal. If Bernard is a 60-man fighter now, he is not what he was, 10, 12 years ago when he would go out there and just bomb guys out. He's a very cerebral type fighter now.
He goes up there to, you know, win fights by using his mind, using his defense. And unfortunately with that, you know, sometimes he's not taking guys out like he used to. I remember, you know, Bernard got screwed in the decision back in 1994 down in Colombia. What the hell was the guy's name? And once again, he suffered two knockdowns, and it was called a draw in the guy's hometown in a fight that everybody but two of the three judges thought Hopkins won. Now, he fought the guy in a rematch in Baltimore, Maryland, and just completely annihilated him, knocked him out. I think for Hopkins to win this title, he's got to put Pascal out cold. I mean, he's got to put him out, you know, because I just can't see the judges giving it to him. And, I mean, Hopkins was very active in that last fight. He suffered the two knockdowns early. One was more legitimate than the other one was. But from round 4 through 12, Hopkins dominated. He had the guy hurt. As I told my one coworker today, I said when the fight was over, the 46-year-old got up on the corners and was jumping up and down. The 28-year-old in his hometown had his head in his hands. He knew he lost the fight, and the judges saved his title. Now, you know, Hopkins is always a guy that's always going to be getting under somebody's skin. Apparently, Pascal gave, because Hopkins was, you know, bitching that he got robbed, which he did. So, I guess Pascal gave him with, like, the title and said, okay, sorry, and Hopkins kept it. Hopkins kept it, and he goes, you know what? And he goes, and soon they will be mine.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of MMA and the Rampage Jackson versus Lyoto Machida fight. But we got Kat on the line, I think, right?
Lyoto Machida fight. Hi, hello?
Hey, Kat.
Hello.
Hey, how are you guys?
Pretty good. And I just was talking about you a little bit earlier before we got you on. You're 6-0, just coming off a win last weekend, right?
I did. You're correct.
Awesome. And you got anything in the works for your next fight?
You know, I actually have a jiu-jitsu tournament. I'm going to go to Worlds here in L.A. next week, the 2nd through the 5th. And that's what I have my eyes on right now. And I got my heart dedicated and going there and doing well. So that's what's next on my list. And as far as MMA, I know that my manager and my coach are working really hard on setting me up, you know, since I'm super motivated and ready to go. So I know that that's going to be waiting for me, all that information, as soon as I get home from Worlds.
Cool. So you're obviously very well-rounded if you're competing in multiple different disciplines. You also have some background in Muay Thai, too, right?
I do. I've been training under the legendary coach Sak Mong Khol. He's a 5-time world champion out of Thailand.
Awesome. Well, what's your ultimate goal with the sport, would you say?
I just want to continue to have fun. You know, I started combative sports when I was younger, you know, just sports in general, because I'm not somebody that's easily entertained. I really have to entertain myself, and getting out and doing sports and competing in things has always been a great outlet for me, a really healthy and positive way for me to, you know, go on with my day, and I just plan on continuing to do it until either my body disagrees with it or, you know, it's no longer fun. I really enjoy this sport. I love the competition, and I absolutely, you know, love my training partners, my school, all the things that come with it. So, you know, I just really want to enjoy myself, and that's all it really takes for me.
All right. It's a good perspective to have. Now, I know that there was an article that was put out just before your last fight that you mentioned Michelle Blaylock having a title at the same weight in the same league that you have a title in. What's that all about? Can you explain that?
Well, one of the shows here, it's a pretty big show called The Ring of Fire. They went and, you know, I won the 125-pound belt against Ivana Coleman last year. And, you know, basically been very, very content with that win. You know, I've been expecting to defend that belt at any time, and I really didn't No, but I knew Michelle was fighting a few weeks ago, and at the end of her fight, you know, she was awarded with a belt, and it was at 125 pounds, and, you know, I'm a supportive fan of Michelle, and I really like to watch her fight. She's a good friend of mine, and, you know, I respect her a lot, but I didn't really understand how we both got the opportunity to fight for a belt individually, but we're not obligated, or, you know, we have the option to not fight each other for, you know, true champion of the 125-pound belt. So, you know, all that aside, I just really, you know, I would just like to, you know, for my own goals and things like that, I would like to, you know, have that belt be fully mine. But, you know, if that fight's not in the cards right now, it's not in the cards right now, and I'm okay with that too.
So if you win that fight, you just have two belts, the same weight, the same league.
I guess that is exactly what that means.
I would think to just combine the two and make a new belt.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. We're both cats. Maybe it could be the cat belt. Some kind of feline thing.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you first got into fighting.
Well, I actually walked into Zingano Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu visiting a friend that was in town one day, and he was here training for an MMA fight. His name's Connor Hewn, and he was training with my now husband, Mauricio Zingano. And I just kind of wanted to say hi, and I noticed what they were doing, and they were training hard, and there was a ground aspect and a stand-up aspect and, you know, a ton of things that I knew nothing about, but I was super attracted to, and I really wanted to know. So I came back in, I tried a class, I was really interested in actively looking for something that was going to get me back in shape after having just had my son, and it offered me exactly what I was looking for. I wanted to be learning something while, you know, doing what it takes to get back in shape and, you know, work on my cardio and things like that. So, I mean, the whole aspect of the sport, I never planned on competing. I just wanted something to do, something different, and an outlet for the things that were going on in my life. And, you know, all together, they combined to create this career / outlet / social life, family, friends, you know, everything that goes into it. That was the best decision I've made, signing up for jiu-jitsu that day.
Awesome. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line. I know he's probably got a question somewhere. Right, Tony?
Of course I do. Of course I do, Rich. That's okay. I mean, I'm sure Pat had the pleasure when she logged on to hearing me rant for a few minutes about my fellow Philadelphian, Bernard Hopkins. So let's switch the gears a little bit here. You know, I'm looking you up online right now, reading, you know, some stuff, you know, interesting fight news about you. And it said, you know, your style is very aggressive, very tenacious type style. When you get in there, I mean, like, how do you switch that on? Because, I mean, just talking to you, you can tell you have a very good personality, very, very charismatic. How do you turn into that, I mean, like, that tenacious, kick-your-ass type fighter?
The wildcat.
Wildcat.
Well, you know, I think 9/10 of this sport is just desire, you know, going in there and realizing that this is 100% you, you know. There's, you know, your coaches can teach you so much, you know, you can condition so much, your training partners can offer you so much, but, you know, when that door closes and when it's you, a referee, and your opponent in there, you know, it's your time to do exactly what you told yourself you were going to do. You know, this is why you signed up, this is why you agreed, this is what's going on. You know, there's not a moment that goes by when I'm in the cage that I'm thinking, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? Okay, so those emotions come up as I'm training for this fight, you know, like, God, I'm stressed out. God, I'm hungry. I'd really, really like a muffin, you know. But you go into these fights and it's just like, I worked so hard for this. I did everything I could to get ready for this. There's nothing that's going to make me not leave everything that I have in this cage today. And, you know, I love the support of my fans. Knowing people are there rooting for me, watching me, just makes me want to work harder. You know, one of my main things is that I don't want to get marked up. So, you know, I try to make sure I'm very diligent in my training so I can go home and, you know, have a smiley, shiny face for my son to look at, because I want all of this to be something that's positive and, you know, as positive to him and his life as it has been to me and mine. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. you know, that just motivates me and drives me. This is something that I honestly feel I was born to do, and it's in my blood. So might as well just go crazy, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I've interviewed a lot of female fighters over the years, and I always find it fascinating that there's that duality there. You know, you feel obligated to keep up your good looks, and at the same time, you got to go out there and punch somebody and get punched. And what's that like as a woman, you know, as opposed to a guy going in there in the cage and having to think about that sort of thing? Does it affect your game a lot, or does it just, you know, just instinct kick in when you get in there?
Oh, I rely on my instincts. You know, this last fight with Takayo Hashi, I went into it with a little bit of a game plan. And right now, you know, I'm kind of debating whether or not I like having a game plan, or if I like just letting my instincts take over and me go in and just do what I feel I should do at the time. You know, the feminine aspects of the sport, you know, I honestly think that women are, you know, especially women with children, you kind of have this, like, maternal instinct to just get there and do what you're doing and make it count. You know, I enjoy being feminine. I enjoy, you know, still absolutely taking care of that side of the sport. the conditioning, the workouts, the everything that goes into, I'm sorry, even training for a fight, you know, those are partial to help keeping me in shape. You know, where every other woman, you know, goes to the gym and does the treadmill and, you know, lifts the weights and gets on the stair stepper and all those things, you know, I get to skip out on those because I go straight to the gym and I train and I, you know, I'm hitting pads and I'm kicking things. I'm working out the same muscles and getting the same cardio as I would be at the, you know, any kind of gym. So to me, it's just an exchange of what I would be doing to try to, you know, maintain a feminine female figure anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a combination of more.
I never thought of it until now, but, you know, I used to always notice in the local circuits when the women would fight, it seemed like they fought with, like, an extra measure of, you know, energy, because it was like they were fighting for all of womankind, I thought at the time. But part of it, I think, is also because women tend to be better boxers and strikers, because maybe it's because they just want to keep their hands up to protect their team. You know, because it's so much more valuable to them than guys. And guys love to walk around with a black eye. It's like a badge of honor. But with women, it's different.
Yeah.
But it's all kind of those terms.
Well, you know, and on top of that, you know, we also need to, I mean, in a sense, like, you know, everyone belongs everywhere. You know, if your dream is your dream and your desire is your desire, go for it. But, you know, for us to be taken seriously, I mean, we do need to work hard and we do need to put on good fights. And the performances can't be so-so. They really need to be, you know, technical and a battle and exactly what is expected out of the guys. And I think the more athletic that women are and, you know, how everybody is just getting better and better these days and the level of competition is getting better, I really think that women are standing up to the task and even half the, you know, the majority of the time exceeding, you know, personal goals and exceeding, you know, fans, you know, ideas of what it should be, you know, so I'm really proud. I'm proud of all the women doing this.
Yeah, I actually come from a high school where one of the first females to wrestle a varsity wrestling match in Massachusetts was on our team. And, you know, so I've always kind of been familiar with women breaking into the sport, and it's something that I tried to champion since day one of our fight site. And one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, when a sport starts out, usually it takes forever for women to break in, even though it has a long way to go with accepting women and getting them more mainstream and bringing more into the sport. I think MMA, it's happened so fast. You know, women were there. Once it started to get famous, women were just part of it. You know, and it took boxing forever to get a female on a televised fight. And you have somebody like Gina Carano comes along, and she just becomes a pop sensation overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually telling Tony before we got you on the call, I think you look better than Gina. So I think you got to look in that category. It's going to be probably interesting to see you two if you ever fight, because she's had some time off. And maybe you've had had an opportunity to catch up with her skills while she's been living up the limelight.
Well, I mean, that would be an honor. It's a huge compliment to be considered near what she is, and I'd love that fight, too. So we'll see. We'll try to make it happen.
Well, you got to get out of Colorado first, right?
Yeah, well, so far, you know, I've been able to sleep in my bed and, you know, have all my friends and have everything be comfortable for me for my fights. And, you know, it's allowed me and afforded me to get, you know, I think, rounded and comfortable and know how I feel going into fights and be able to have expectations about what my body's going to do and altitude and yada, yada, yada. You know, I'm excited to go and fight other places. I'm excited to try all my skills and stuff against other people. You know, having Takayo up here and knowing that her different style coming from Japan, you know, that was definitely something of concern to me. So I know as I go and I travel, I'm going to have, you know, some of the same experiences. People aren't going to have, you know of my style, and I'm not going to know of theirs as much. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm very excited for the opportunities that are coming my way out of state. It's going to be fun.
Right, yeah, it's important to go at your own pace, too. I mean, especially when you're building an undefeated record there. Not that you want to fight pushovers, but, you know, you got to take it at your own one day at a time and, you know, let things happen as they go. But it's interesting that you talk about the altitude, because I actually spent my freshman year out there at Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy. So I'm very, very familiar with what that does to you. multiple runs, especially in the summertime when we first got down there. And it hits you like a ton of bricks, but it's so good for you. I mean, they have the boxing, the Olympic training out there for a lot of sports, actually, not just the boxing. So what does that add to your game? Does it help you out a lot? Do you notice that?
My biggest fear in a fight is going out there and getting tired. So, you know, whether I'm fighting somebody that I, you know, I'm guaranteed we're going to go to the ground or guaranteed we're going to stand up or, you know, any kind of whatever, you know, advantage I can feel is coming my way, I absolutely overtrain for expecting a fight to go five rounds. You know, even if it's a three-round fight, I just, you know, that's my biggest fear. That's the only thing that I think can keep me from, you know, doing what I can do and shining when I want to shine. And so my conditioning is something that regardless of where I go, I'm always going to make sure it's up to par. And, you know, I really hope that most athletes and everybody that I will compete against has that same mentality too.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, I can't tell you how many boxers and MMA fighters, when you ask them, one of my favorite questions to ask is, you know, what's the most important thing you can do to get ready for a fight? And they either say cardio or running. It's all about the running. Mm-hmm. You got to get wind. And coming from a wrestling background myself, I never went into MMA, but I did box. And just that the wind, I mean, it's so important, especially in MMA, because you're doing so much grappling and jiu-jitsu that, you know, the energy is going to get sucked out of your muscles if you're not if you don't have the air to breathe in and send oxygen to your muscles. So it's so much more important.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely can see the value there. And it's something that you really need at the beginning of a fight career to understand. You really need that background to know that. So it's good to hear that you have that perspective already. You know, usually people don't figure it out until they do gas out in a fight.
Well, you know, like you, I actually wrestled for a long time too. And man, you know, the 1 hour to rehydrate before you cut, you know, before you compete after cutting weight and stuff, you know, you definitely can tell when the weight cut plus not enough conditioning is why you feel the way you feel when things are not as fun anymore, you know. So, you know, I've had a little bit of trauma in those areas myself, so that's really why I just want to make sure I'm always on top of it.
Nice. Well, I was kind of lucky. I only had 1 year where I really had to cut weight. My senior year, I happened to be at the same weight as the captain. I beat him in a wrestle-off, and then he had a freshman at 171. I was about 155. Yeah, I ended up wrestling 171 the whole year, so I never had to cut weight.
Aww.
But I always...
You were that guy. You were that guy that was eating a sandwich on the side, huh?
Yeah, I've been doing sit-ups on the bus in a hoodie.
Well, I got one that tops Rich, though. and I just confirmed this. I just confirmed this about 2 months ago. I am still, only because I don't think there's anybody out there stupid enough to make an attempt at doing this, the only guy in college boxing to have competed in 5 different weight classes within a 3-month span.
Oh, wow. Dang.
Yeah.
Well, hats off to you.
Yeah, I was
that's dedication.
I was talking to my old assistant coach when we were up there at the alma mater just a few months ago. When we were talking about it, he goes, oh, my God, I remember when you did that. And I'm like, I'm the only guy. He goes, well, I can't think of anybody else that would have tried it or would have been stupid enough to even try it.
Well,
and
I was going to say,
like,
how many
just,
friends did you have at the end of that list?
Well, it was tough. I mean, I got there. I had come off major knee surgery, so I went into the season a little bit out of shape because I couldn't run. So my weight was up. I was like, 186, 187. They're like, first fight of the semester in January, late January, they're like, okay, we're going to take this one at 190. I said, okay, I was right at 186, 187. So then the next week I'm starting to run a little bit more to get my weight down, and I'm going to write about 182, and the coach is like, your opponent pulled out. We got to put you in with so-and-so. I'm like, how much does he weigh? They're like, 210. I'm like, 210? That's like almost 20. That's more than 25 pounds. They're like, yeah, but he's inexperienced. Yeah, it's great. We ended up being national champion. So I'm sitting there with eating food, putting rocks in my pockets. Barely, I don't even think I fully officially made the quote-unquote weight, but they're like, yeah, you're close enough. So I fought heavyweight. Next week, they need you to fight heavyweight again. I'm like, I'll fight heavyweight again. What, are you nuts? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it, fine. So now I'm like literally at 181 fighting heavyweight. I'm like, okay. The next week, I'm at 178. They're like, okay, now you can fight at your natural weight class, 180. Thank you very much. So I fight 180 at 2 fights. So like, regionals are coming up. It's Monday. Regionals are Friday. They're like, you fight, and I'll set the fight at 180 in the regionals. And I'm like, we've had an opening at 165. I said, that's 3 days away. I can make it. So I cut from 180 to 165 in 3 days.
Wow.
165 for the regionals. And then for the nationals, they bumped me to 172, 5 weight classes. From January, 28th to April 12th.
Well, you sound like a coach's dream. Sounds like he can tell you to do anything. That's awesome. And you come through. Good deal.
So, we had other guys that I boxed with and other guys that were on my team and everything. Yeah, it's like as soon as they would try to set up a fight, it was like, oh, you got to fight so-and-so. Okay. So, you're going to be fighting a guy that's an All-American or a national champion. Or you got to bump up in weight class to fight this guy. Okay. And then it was the one guy we always try to get out of it. I have a big test coming up. I can't fight this weekend. I know the one time they're sitting there, he was complaining about his knee bothering him. So they're like, Tony, can you take his place on this card? And this is a week after I had my whole mouth cut open. I mean, I really required stitches, but I wouldn't go. And so-and-so doesn't want to fight on the card. His knee's bothering him. I said, oh, so you're putting the guy on the card that just came off major knee surgery because the other guy's knee is bothering him. I said, yeah, I'll go. I said, yeah, I'll go. I don't care. I'll fight anyone. That's even what my assistant coach, Ken Cooper, was saying a few weeks ago. He goes, you were like the dream guy to have because it's like, you know what? I didn't fear nobody. You know, what's the worst that could happen to you?
That's for me. Because I was that guy on the wrestling team, not so much on the boxing team when I got to college, but I remember one fight, probably the worst weight experience I ever had. I had to drink a gallon of water before the weigh-ins to bump up to 189 to wrestle a guy who was like a 3-time state champion at that point. And, of course, the coach says, all you got to do is stay off your back. And I literally had gotten called that afternoon, like maybe half half an hour before the first match out of a dead sleep. I fell asleep somehow. I wasn't ready. And the coach was like, you got to get down here. You got to do the programs for the fight. Because I used to do the programs. You know, I'd set up all the matches and all the weights and the pictures and stuff. And I ran the school newspaper, so I could do it pretty quick. So the coach got me up, got me down there, and then he tells me like 10 minutes before weigh-in, I gotta make weight for 189. I gotta gain weight. So
wow.
I get the water, I weigh in, I puke everything up, and then finally I get to the point where the coach has got to make a decision whether to bump me up or not. He bumps me up, and you know this is a crucial match. This is our arch rivals, and he sends me out there 189. And he says, just stay off your back. And of course, 30 seconds later, I'm getting pinned. Probably the worst day of my life in sports. But the one time that I did have to cut, it was kind of funny because I lost a pound and a half. No, yeah, pound and a half in 15 minutes. That was my all-time record. But that's the most I really ever had to do. So I was lucky enough to be a kind of a middleweight. But enough about us.
Wow. Well, it's an honor to meet you, headstrong men. Very nice.
What would you say was your toughest fight or experience with MMA so far?
Well, to be honest, this fight with Takayo Hashi was, that was right up there. I was planning on fighting Angela Samora up until a week before the fight. And, you know, as much as I really didn't think that the opponent change would affect me, you know, warming up and being in the back, and, you know, I'm a big fan of Japanese MMA as well. So watching, some of the different strategies and techniques that go on in those shows versus what I see here in the United States, I felt very prepared in my arsenal, but I definitely didn't want to make any unforgivable mistakes. So going into this fight, you know, my coaches were working really hard with me on my Muay Thai, and going in standing up was a very, very unfamiliar, untreaded ground for me. You know, I always have the confidence in my back pocket that, you know, I'll sit here and I'll punch and I'll trade, but, you know, as soon as I get a little bit uncomfortable, I'm going to take the fight where I'm most comfortable. And in this fight, I took that option away from myself. You know, I wanted to go out and use the techniques and the strategies that Sakmon Cole had given me and prepared me for to go into this fight, and I really wanted to capitalize on all the education I've put into myself for the past few years. That made me kind of sick to my stomach just to even think about. It kind of makes me sick to my stomach right now to think that that actually happened and it worked out well. But, you know, I'm really, really glad that I got shoved into that situation and forced to be out of my element and still found ways to make it work and get the W. So I would absolutely say this most recent fight from Saturday was the most challenging, both mentally and, I guess, physically, in a while. I haven't had somebody that has, you know, pushed me up against the cage and kind of just wanted to hold me somewhere before. I'm used to being just super aggressive and outgoing and, you know, big risk taker, and because I took away the ground portion and the throwing portion and all that out of the fight, I was very limited to the things that I got to just be explosive with, and, you know, I had a lot of figuring out to do in a week, let alone just a night, you know, having to stand across from that girl knowing she's, you know, very talented and very tough, and she came to get herself put back on the map, and I was very, very excited when I got to put her away. So that was definitely a very big stretch for me there.
Well, a slam KO, too. It doesn't happen very often. I actually saw it once live, but I don't think I've seen it any other time on TV.
Yeah, so that was, well, and you know, I at the point where I got that slam, I know we only had 18 seconds left, but it was do or die. I had, you know, she jumped guard and we'd worked things, I don't even remember, just kind of joking around one day about if someone jumps guard, you know, put your forehead against their carotid and then drop. And, you know, I just bounced right off of her neck. And, you know, I looked at her and she looked like she was out, but I was so, caught up in the, I don't want to sit here and punch anymore, you know, I hope you're down for good. So I hit her a couple more times, and you know, it was a KO already at that point. But you know, that was a very, very big breath of fresh air, even though there was only a few seconds left to have the fight go out that way.
Nice. That'll give you some memories.
Yeah.
That was kind of like a glorified headbutt to the neck.
Right. Like, oh, hey, that works. Nice.
Get away with one. So what fighters out there do you try to watch a lot or try to emulate?
You know, my favorite fighter at the moment is usually the person that I'm trying to mimic the most. I would, you know, obviously I'm a huge fan of my Muay Thai instructor. His name's Sak Mon Kol. You know, he's just what he does to people during fights and things like that. Just the confidence he exudes and, you know, how he goes out and is just very, very talented at what he does. You know, I would absolutely like to be him someday. If I have to look out on the MMA circuit, one of the people that I absolutely most admire would be John Jones, just with his composure and his elbows, and you know, he adds the throws in with, you know, absolute power and explosiveness. And you know, to me, I think those are the most interesting fights, and I think that what he represents coming up in this sport technically is just something that I want to emulate. I think that he's very good and very talented, and I would like to learn all the stuff he knows as well. You know, it's those are really the most influential people for me right now. I watch girl fights when they come on, but I typically don't study them just because I don't want to blow anybody up or, you know, have any kind of doubt or be critical of myself, because, you know, I think someone is good here or good there. You know, I'm a huge fan of the sport, and I absolutely love, you know, watching women compete and things like that. But as a, you know, participant in the sport at this point, you know, I try not to overstudy or watch anybody too much, you know, just for my own peace of mind, I guess.
Cool. Yeah, actually, I saw John Jones come up through the local circuits in New England, and I got to see one of his fights, even though it just happened to go by in a flash. There was a big fight that I think it was Mohegan Sun, one of those Connecticut casinos there, and he knocked the guy out in like 15 seconds. But when he became famous and was in the UFC, I just kind of looked up his record, and then I realized, geez, I've seen this guy fight a lot of times. But yeah. He's one of the only guys that I've ever watched that can land a spinning back elbow.
Right? Yeah. Tell me how many times I tried to do that on the bag and just missed and fell on my face.
Yeah.
A little bit of work to do on that.
Yeah, I remember just watching the last UFC. Somebody finally knocked somebody out with a spinning back fist, and something I had never seen until then. I think it was one of those guys that was on the Ultimate Fighter that was on the bad end of it, but he was having a good fight up until then. But I think a lot of people are learning from John Jones. that punch lands, and that elbow lands if you try it enough times.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive.
And it was interesting. In that same fight, if you remember, if you watched it, the other guy tried one and missed, and then the guy who ended up getting the knockout later came right back with one and landed it, but didn't get the knockout at that point. He got it a little later in the fight, but it's like, hey, I'll show you how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're throwing those here. See mine. Very cool.
So what do you think about the whole Strikeforce-UFC merger and the opportunity now for women to potentially fight in the UFC at some point?
Well, you know, progress is progress, and I'll take what I can get. You know, I really hope it only means good things. I haven't really kept up on what Dana White is saying about the whole deal. I know a while ago he was saying that women will never fight on the UFC, and you know, just because of the affiliation, I don't even understand what would necessarily be considered the UFC now, because they are, you know, essentially the same show. So I really don't know. I just, you know, I love to fight. I want to continue to fight good fights. I want to continue to fight good people and grow as an athlete. So whatever opportunity there is for me to do that, you know, I'm all about it. I just, you know, I just want to know where to be, what to weigh, and when I get to eat again after that. So, you know, it's all good to me. Progress is progress, like I said.
Awesome. Now, do you have a favorite strike or submission that you like to go to?
My favorite submission is the one that makes people go tap. That's all I like. I just, you know, whatever's in front of me, I want to take it. I like to be unorthodox. You know, I sometimes like to go to, you know, for things that I just kind of, I look at and it's a little bit crafty. I'll be like, well, the arm doesn't bend that way. Let's try this. Or, you know, here's an arm and a neck. Let me see if I roll this way where we're going to go. You know, a lot of stuff I fall into and I just absolutely enjoy being a risk taker. So that, you know, that's definitely something that I like to use in both my stand-up and in my ground. You know, so all of that together ends up being an awesome, nice puzzle for me.
Cool. And do you have any role models, either inside or outside the sport, that have helped you out along the way big time?
Well, I am actually still very, very close with my high school wrestling coaches. Jim Hune I started wrestling with him when him and affiliates of him when I was 12 years old, and I've known success as a wrestler, a success as an athlete through him for a very large portion of my time as an athlete. He is currently, you know, he takes on the role of a pretend grandpa for my son, and, you know, has a day every week that they hang out and they go get pizza and stuff like that. And, you know, this is coming from a man that was absolutely pretty positive that he didn't want girls on his wrestling team. So the fact that I won him over through my hard work and I got into his heart to the point that, you know, now we're very, very close, closer than, you know, most family to me. You know, I absolutely adore him, and he's somebody that I look up to and will always look up to for the rest of my life. That is a very, very strong man there, and I'm very proud to know him. Also, my husband. I would not be where I am today by any means if I didn't have the support of that man and the guidance and things like that. Mauricio Zingano is the real deal. Coach, husband, father, everything. He's a great, great person. And these are both two men that are very influential in my life. My training partners, Matt Sims, Dan Bentz, all of them, you know, I'm sane because these people help me keep me sane. You know, going into these fights, I'm prepared and ready in every aspect of the word because of these men in my life, you know, and I'm very, very happy and proud to call them my family.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good story. It's kind of just brings me right back to high school because, like I said, I had that the woman on our team who was really, she just broke down all the barriers. You know, it was unheard of in the sport of wrestling at that time, never mind Massachusetts. But she broke through the barriers. She had pink and purple hair. She changed it every week, the color of her hair.
Oh, cool.
Intense, and she never gave up. You know, she actually had the second year that she wrestled, she had three or four other girls that came out for the team the first week, and they were all gone by the next week. But she was there, and she kind of grew on everybody. And she was much lighter than I was, so I didn't really have to wrestle her that much. But whatever I did, she fought like, you know, she was.
It sounds like a very cool girl.
Yeah, I always gave her a lot of respect, and she actually ended up being the first girl to wrestle for Harvard University. She was a very smart girl, too, so she really made history in more ways than one. And I just,
what was her name?
Laura Lee Summer.
Huh.
And she's on Facebook. I just actually sent her a link to a story about they're actually now coming out in Massachusetts with women's wrestling teams for the first time. And sanctioning it. So I sent her that link and I said, you're partly responsible for that.
Wow, that is very cool.
But, you know, back in the day, she was something to contend with, that's for sure. And just never gave up. You know, that's the big thing. You just got to stick it out. And it's just, like I said, when I see women, or when I used to see women fight in the local circuits out in New England, it would just dawn on me that these ladies were fighting for something extra, you know, because they really, really, you really are. You're representing more than just yourself when you go out there as a woman in a sport that's dominated by men in a lot of cases. So you really have to have that something extra, that desire to prove something. So it sounds like you have that, and she had that, and wrestling is really, it's an even tougher sport than MMA to break into as a female. Maybe not so much now as back then, but still, it's not easy. You know, and even boxing, as long as women have been accepted in boxing, it's still like a cliche. I mean, not a cliche, but a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a taboo almost in America, at least. Boxing, women's boxing overseas in countries like Germany, they headline fights, but over here, you know, it's still not that popular. So, you know, there's a lot of barriers to break down. I'll definitely give you props for fighting the good fight, literally.
Well, thank you very much. I actually am on my way to weigh-ins for our second girl coming out of our academy to fight. Her name is Sherry Pasco, and she's fighting tomorrow at 125 pounds for Rocky Mountain Bad Boys, Bad Girls. And, you know, she trained with me and helped me prepare for this most recent fight that I had, and I have nothing but great expectations for this fight for her tomorrow. She's a purple belt. She's been doing Muay Thai for about 4 years, and she's competed in jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai before, but she decided to throw it all together and try her luck at it here in the cage, and I'm ecstatic. I'm so excited for her to go out and show what she's got because, you know, she's going to be a great representative of all of this, too, and I'm so excited to be a part of it. I've been around with a lot of these guys and helped out with them getting ready and all this and that, but I have a special place in my heart for Sherry right now because I've never helped, you know, raise a girl and groom her into being, you know, exactly what she wants to be, and I'm very excited for her success or whatever she gets out of this entire thing. I'm very proud of her, and I'm happy to have a hand in something with another woman getting up into this career.
Yeah, more power to you. I mean, it's always exciting to see two women at the top of their game fighting each other and putting it all on the line, you know, especially now that they let them fight 5 minute rounds.
Yeah.
It's something unique to the sport of MMA, I think, that women broke in so quickly and that they were right up to par with the same limits as the men, same rules. Which you don't usually see in other sports. I mean, you look at women's basketball, they use different sized balls and everything. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's different rules, you know, when you come between women and men in so many cases, but not in MMA. It's same thing.
No.
It didn't last long at 3 rounds.
Yeah, nothing makes me more mad than if somebody doesn't take me as seriously as the guys training. They usually get to figure that out pretty quick.
Yeah, that's something you don't see in other sports either. You know, like you don't see a women's softball team practicing with a men's baseball team. And the women wrestle and grapple and fight with the men and practice in a lot of these cases. And it just makes them better and better. So that's good to see. It's a good sport all around, and I'm glad to see it grow. And like I said, because of my experience with that lady on the wrestling team that proved a lot to all of us and stuck it out and showed us what hard is really all about. You know, I've always championed women in the sport, in any combat sports, because it's so hard and because it's, you know, such an obstacle to get over. And to hear that you're helping somebody else do the same thing, you know, that's what it takes to get the attention of guys like Dana White who want to be chauvinistic and say they don't want to see women in the octagon. Eventually, he's going to have to. He's going to have to give in. And it's going to be people like
Yep.
With that, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or thank, say hello to out there?
Well, I would really like to thank my manager, Ricky Vasquez. I would like to thank our school. I'd like to thank Zingano Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai. Inked Out Apparel, I have Tussle Fight Gear and MrsJuicePlus.com. Also, Rockstar Nails and Just Burritos. These are all people that make this possible for me. They feed me, keep me happy, give me entertainment, all these things that go into me being able to do what I do so everyone can enjoy it. So, to all these people, very, very much thank you. And you gentlemen, too. Thank you for paying attention to me.
Of course. You're training with by eating burritos? Is that what you said?
Oh, and they are good. Oh, man, they are so good. They're my cheat day, and I love them to death.
Right. Sounds good. Well, it was great having you on and talking to you. You sound like you definitely have your head on your shoulders, and you're going to go far in the sport. So we'll keep an eye out for you, and possibly down the line sometime, we'll have you on again.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely, and we'll compare burritos.
Okay, all right. I'm pretty sure you're going to lose, but it's all right. It's okay. We'll figure it out. I'm always down for taste testing. All right, thank you, guys. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, Tony, speaking of food, what was that place that you were talking about that had the best Philly cheesesteaks down there in Philly?
Oh, well, it's not Pasagino's. Pasagino's, as we say in Philadelphia, you know, say you're coming down to Philadelphia, you know, and they're saying, okay, which bar is around is coming to Philadelphia? And Rich, my only time in Philadelphia, basically, I just grabbed a cheesesteak off a vendor outside. Well, no, you can't do that. Okay, which they're going to take you to Patrigino's. Because Patrigino's are two places on, like, corners, like, kind of, like, opposite sides of the street.
Right.
And it's been, like, the debate for years. What's better, Patrigino's, Patrigino's? Only tourists go to Patrigino's because of the name.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, somebody comes to Philadelphia, okay, you got to go to Patrigino's, and you got to run the art museum steps. But a real Philadelphian, I'm like, yeah, I'll go to Patrigino's if it's 3 a.m. and I'm drunk and it's the only place open. if I'm down at a Phillies game and, you know, afterwards, you know, because they have a club inside the stadium that stays open for hours. So say I'm partying until 2 in the morning and my sober friend's down there saying, come on, Tony, can we get the hell out of here? And I'm dancing with a bachelorette party. And then he's like, come on, let's get some food. Where are we going to go? We're going to go to Patrigino's because it's still open at 2 in the morning and there's a line down the street. But during a regular time, I got about 5 or 6 places that will just annihilate Patrigino's. Tony Luke's got some good food.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Tony Luke Jr. has been in a few movies. He was in that movie Invincible about Vince Papale. He played like a goofball in that movie. And then he was in a movie called The Nail, the Joey Nardone story. And it was like a boxer type movie. And he was the lead character in it. And I had some friends of mine that had extras roles in that movie. And I was a little pissed off that I wasn't one of them. But yeah, Tony Luke's got some good sandwiches. There's a place called Jim's, got good cheesesteaks. Place actually not far from me, in Norristown, of all places, has like a 2-footer.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tony Luke's because I was watching Man vs. Food last night, and they had Tony Luke's on there. The guy went right there, and they had the first ever extreme cheesesteak challenge or whatever, and he went against Tony Luke. Usually he just goes against himself, but this time he went against Tony Luke. And Tony had it with the Whiz, and he had it with the American cheese. And he took down, I think, 5 pounds worth of cheesesteak in one sitting in an hour. And, man, that guy's got an appetite, that's for sure. But it definitely did look good. They got the right idea, you know. And it kind of made me think, oh, I got to mention that. See if that's the place that Tony recommends. And sure enough, that was the first place that you mentioned. So that guy must be pretty smart to know that. And he did run the steps and ran by the Rocky statue. It's because they moved it, I guess. They moved it to a park or something down there.
Actually, the Rocky statue is now at the foot of the Art Museum steps. It's no longer, you know, was top of the steps for a while, then they bitched and moaned, so they took it down from there, and then they moved it to the Spectrum, but the Spectrum just got demolished. They had to put it somewhere, so there was a big fight with the people from the Art Museum. Well, they didn't want it at the top of the steps, so they came to an agreement that it'll be placed at the bottom of the steps. But now, Rich, let's
talk about marketing and making money. I like to make money, and I'm big into marketing. You know, I was a public relations guy. I studied public relations and advertising when I was in college, which was a division of journalism. And I'm not going to come out there and say I'm the greatest advertising genius out there ever. If it was, I'd be working for a huge advertising firm, and I'm not. But I think I know a little bit about it, you know? And I like to make money, Rich. So, Rich, when I do some charity stuff during the course of the year. Now, next month, I'll probably be working at a church carnival at a dunk tank. And it used to be the 4th of July week. So what would I do? I would take a picture of myself dressed up as Uncle Sam, pointing to the camera, I want you to try and dunk me. And then I put all the advertising on there and stuff. And people would show up because I was my own best advertising. Looking like a goof, being loud, just being myself. And people used to like it. Now, about all of my friends, I think maybe two or three of my friends have ever gone to that carnival in the 30-plus years that we've been friends. And that I've been going to this carnival. I've been going there since I was like 4 years old. But now I got 30 or 40 of my friends going to this carnival. Why? To dunk me, right? So now they come to this carnival to dunk me. Guess what they do? They got their kids going on rides. They're buying food. They're buying beer. They're playing in the gambling hall. They're all dropping about 50, 60 bucks each. Look how much money the carnival just made because I promoted myself to my friends, right? So now we got the art museums. The art museum comes out there and says, we don't want the Rocky statue there. It's not art. It's a movie prop. Well, you know, for a movie prop, it's pretty goddamn impressive. An 8-foot statue of the likeness of Sylvester Stallone, a.k.a. Rocky Balboa. It's a pretty goddamn impressive movie prop. Okay, now let's look at something else about it. How many people go to the art museum steps every day to run them like Rocky? Hundreds. Iceman John Scully, who we're going to talk to. What's Iceman say? Come to Philadelphia, he always makes spiders run the steps. I know other people, they come to Philadelphia, we got to run the steps. And they do the Rocky dance on top of the steps. Exactly. Rocky made the art museum steps. They come up and say, no, the art museum steps made Rocky. Bullshit. That's a load of shit, and they know it. They're just trying to be like self-important, and they're making themselves look like asses. So yeah. Like, we don't want the statue up there. We don't want this. And you know what? Hey, here's my advertising thing. I put the statue up there because you know what? People are going to come run them steps, and say 100 people a day come and run them steps. And they all take a picture with the statue. And if 10 of them, paid admission to go into your museum, guess what? You just got 10 more paying customers a day. And say they paid 10 bucks each, right? It was 100 bucks. Like, you just made 100 bucks.
Got to get like a little graph together and get like 1,000 cardboard cutouts of the statue and just put it up there like every day. To the Hall of Fame this year with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty awesome.
I think, unfortunately, as much as I like the Rocky movies, I think they kind of overshadow the real Rocky too much. But, it doesn't mean they weren't good. It's just kind of unfortunate that the real Rocky doesn't get as much attention as he should have.
The first one they did, which was like the Chuck Wepner story, you know, the guy is down out on his luck, you know, he's not, he's never going to be, anything in life. And, he gets a shot. He gets a shot out of a fluke, and he makes the best edit he can with it. And now when they had to make Rocky, when they were making the sequels, because they knew there was money to be made. Well, if you go back and look at the Rocky, which ask any kid, ask a younger kid, maybe 12 or younger that's watched the Rocky movies, and ask them which ones they like the best. Then ask any adult which ones they like the best. The adults are usually going to say Rocky 1 and sometimes Rocky 2. Most kids are going to say 3 or 4.
Yeah, I remember
I'll tell you what.
Seeing 4 because it was in the theaters when I was at the right age to go to movies.
Right, right. Yeah, you're younger than me, so you were about 8.
When I went to college, I took a class in film direction, motion picture direction. They actually talked a lot about Number One, because Number One broke a lot of trends in Hollywood. There was never a movie up to that point that was that gritty and violent as far as fighting scenes. I mean, if you look back to even Jake LaMotta, Raging Bull, that story, you know, there wasn't as much blood and guts and gore and, just true grit, I guess you could say. So it really made a lot of history as a movie format, goes for that type of action film. They have that much blood.
And look, you know, with the entertainment value for the movie, I'll say 3 and 4 are more geared for a younger audience, because there isn't as much background story. It's like, you look at Rocky 3. Okay, they have the opening sequence where he wins the title. Then they cut to a montage where he's knocking everybody out, and they show Clubber Lang, Mr. T, training. Then he has a little altercation with Paulie, and then he's talking to his wife, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, he's in the ring with Hulk Hogan. And it's moving quick. He's in the ring with Hulk Hogan. And then he's got the statue, and he's arguing with Clubber Lang. And then, he's training for the first fight. And they had the first fight, and he dies. Then it slows down a little bit when he's talking to Apollo, and they're talking about the comeback and this and that. Only maybe about 10 minutes of slowness. Now he's in L.A., and he's starting training. And then they have the big training, quote-unquote, sequence, and then they fight. The movie moves really fast, and there's a lot of things to keep you on your toes. Rocky IV, same thing. They start with the opening scene, you know, he wins the title back, and then he's over and having a birthday party, and then they're already talking about this Russian coming in. I mean, the Russian guy comes over, and within 10 minutes, he's already set to fight Apollo Creed, you know? I mean, there wasn't even negotiations about it. Apollo's like, yeah, I want to come out of retirement and fight him. Okay, the contract was signed. And it's fight night. There's not even any training.
So much, too, because the way the ending was set up, you know, first of all, it's Cold War times in the 80s, you know, so it's perfect setting. And then you have the arch rival country fans rooting for Rocky. It's like the Red Sox rooting for the Yankees, you know? It's never
going to happen. Exactly. Exactly. But look how fast it moves. I mean, Apollo is no more in the ground, and Rocky's flying to Russia. It's like the fight signed to him delivered within 2 seconds. I mean, it wasn't any, you know, talking about it. Like in Rocky One, there's a lot of background on, you know, who this guy is and, you know, his street life and trying to make a name for himself and, you know, the people he interacts with and the loan shark and all this. And it's kind of slow. It really builds a lot of the characters. It's a very robust film in building characters. Rocky Two is the same thing. You know most of the characters. You know Paulie now. You know Adrian now. You know Rocky now. You know Apollo. So you know all these guys, and now it's like, okay, but we still got to make the movie robust a little bit about this guy struggling now that he has his fame, but now it's a different kind of back of life, and, you know, and there was just a lot of doubt. Wasn't as good, you know. Then it builds into the fight. The other ones just move fast. There's like no rhyme, no reason about it at all. They just happen.
Well, here's a segue for you. Speaking of a guy that's dying in fights, there was an actual case here. Speaking of another, you know, I talked about black guys for MMA before, but people getting arrested. Well, this one takes the cake out of all of them. This one, really took me for it. And a couple guys get ready to fight up in, I think it's in Canada. Where is it supposed to be? Calgary. Well, this guy is supposed to be on the card, and they have all this trouble getting regulation passed in this area of Canada, Calgary. And finally decide, all right, well, we'll let it happen, but we got to do background checks on all the fighters. next thing you know, they're looking for this guy for manslaughter. And it turns out he's on the car. Before they even do the background check, they find this out. And the guy died in a Calgary hospital after an alleged altercation with this fighter, Dylan Desjarlais. It took place on February 17th, 2010. And the kid was a teenager, I think, at the time, and Desjarlais was 25 years old. So ended up killing the kid. And then he tries to just continue on in his career as a MMA fighter, like nothing ever happened. So they ended up catching him because he decided to try to get on the major fighter. Go figure. And one of those bad boys everybody likes to talk trash about. And a lot of people came down on hard on this guy because it sounded like it was just too good to be true. His excuse for having the 4 times the legal limit of testosterone in his system. Jail soon is in the news again because California State Athletic Commission decided they're going to give him an indefinite suspension, which doesn't really mean forever because I guess he has until 2012 where his license is valid for. So he, once his license expires in June of 2012, then he can reapply for a license at that point. So it's kind of like they're treating him like Mike Tyson when he bit Holyfield here off. And justly so, because they're not only concerned that he was disingenuous with his testimony about, you know, why he thought he was justified in taking these steroids, these testosterone shots, but they're also concerned that he's been busted for money laundering, and he may have provided some false or misleading testimony there. And even though, you know, one shouldn't really have anything to do with the other in a perfect sports world, I guess, it does. You know, it's character. You don't want a guy like that bringing a black eye to the sport, basically. So that is actually good news for me because I thought that, you know, it was going to go the way of, you know, them just giving him a slap on the wrist like it sounded. Sounded like they were going to do it at the beginning. And I remember just a few months ago they were talking about putting this guy on the Ultimate Fighter, which is the worst thing you could possibly do. You know, here's this guy who goes in and he cheats for a fight, and it's the only way he can compete with the guy. And then he goes in and tries to cover it up like nothing ever happened, like he was supposed to do that. He had to do that. And he cleared it, supposedly, which turned out to be not true. Or at least everybody that he said he cleared it with denies it. So whether it's you know, a fault of both parties, both sides, we might not ever know, but it just seemed like a lame excuse to me at the time. And it just, there's no way it could be true. There's definitely some blurring of the lines there, whether it's an outright lie or not. So that was good news to hear. Another couple of boxing stories I wanted to mention. Don King's about to set a record, speaking of scumbags, in Missouri. Can you guess what record it is?
In Missouri?
Missouri, yeah.
Most times having a, most times getting sued by an arena for failing obligations.
No, actually, you know, this is one of those times where we had to give Don King a little bit of a pat on the back because it's a good record to break. He's going to have, for the first time ever in Missouri history, 4 world championships contested in a single card on June 25th. And Devin Alexander is going to headline. He's 21-1 with 13 KOs. He's fighting a WBO No. 3 ranked contender, Lucas Matisse, at the Family Arena in St. Charles, Missouri. And let's see what belt it's for, but I would assume it's for the WBO, since they mentioned WBO No. 3. We also are going to have undefeated light heavyweight International Boxing Federation champion, Tavoris Clout, 21-0 with Team KOs. And he's fighting a guy that you know pretty well, IBF No. 1 ranked mandatory challenger, Yusuf Mack. 29-3-2, 26 KOs.
We interviewed. We got the win over Otis Triple G Griffin.
Right.
Well, to be honest, I don't see him beating Tavares Crown, to be totally honest.
All right. I'll tell him you said that. also, rising heavyweight Bermain Beware Stivern, who's 21-1 with 19 KOs. And he's going to square off at WBC Heavyweight Elimination Bout, opposing Ray the Rain Man Austin, 28-5 with 4 draws and 18 KOs. And I haven't seen him fight in a while, but I know that I think the last time I ever saw him in a highlight reel, it was on the bad end of a Samuel Peter knockout. If it's the same guy. I didn't know his nickname was the Rain Man, though. He's stealing your nickname, Tony. What are you going to do? He doesn't have boxing, though. In the fourth bout, that's for title WBA Cruiserweight Champion Guillermo El Felino Jones, 37-3 with 2 draws, 29 knockouts. He's going to be undefeated WBC USNDC title holder Ryan the Irish Outlaw Coin, who's 16-0 with 6 KOs. And actually, I think one of those wasn't for a title. Here's the fourth title. We're going to have Cornelius T9 Bundridge, who's the IBF Junior Middleweight Champion and a contender veteran. He's 30-4 with 18 KOs, and he's going to defend his title against number one ranked IBF mandatory challenger, Sushu Powell. And for some reason, Powell is the only one of his programs that doesn't have his record.
I think there's two spots, or two.
Oh, now I have to look it up. While I'm looking it up. While I'm looking up on BoxRec to confirm his record, I did also want to mention a boxing match that's sort of another black eye to MMA, even though it's not really. Antonio Tarver is going down to Australia to fight Danny Green for $1.5 million. And Danny Green is his own promoter. So he does all the work for himself, and he's bringing this guy in and down there by himself to Australia to fight for, well, obviously not by himself, he has help, but just goes to show you, you know, guys like Dana White and the Fertittas, they don't have this big mechanism surrounding them. And all this casino money, and they can't pay their main events $1.5 million, not even $1 million. And here's he's the challenger. And he's coming down there to fight Danny Green in Australia for $1.5 million. And that was in the airwaves. Last few weeks. And this last big ticket guy he brought down there to Australia was Roy Jones Jr., of course, who did not fare well, if you remember. So I thought that was really key timing, you know, especially with all this Nick Diaz stuff going around. It just kind of died down. I haven't heard a hide or hair of what's going on with that fight with Jeff Lacy, whether it's going down or not. Because last I heard that Nick Diaz had not signed the contract, but Jeff Lacy had. And maybe there's going to be a waiting period or whatever to figure out whether George St. Pierre is going to fight Nick Diaz or not. And that's, I think, what's holding it up to make it final or not. But it should send a message to those guys, the Fertittas and Dana White. The message I was not allowed to send today by asking a question. So the traditional media guys go in. Sushu Powell is 26-2. And did they find out? Cornelius Bundridge, yes, they fought in 2005, 6 years ago, the 6th of May, in Mashantucket, Connecticut, at Foxwoods, and Bundridge knocked him out in the very first round. So Powell's going to be looking for a little bit of revenge. See how that goes. Right. First round knockout. Actually, did I say? Yeah, Sessue Powell knocked Bundridge out, right?
Yeah. They both came out in the first round and they simultaneously punched and knocked each other down. Then they got up and Powell threw a left hand and knocked them out.
I wasn't sure if I made that clear.
I just watched it.
It must have taken you a while. Let's see what we got coming up this week in here. Actually, tonight we have a fight in New York. Rosalind Waters. Between Mike Ruiz, 12-4 with 6 knockouts, and Martin Wright, 8-1 with 2 draws and 4 knockouts. So what else we got going on? Big title fights. Oh, you know what we didn't even talk about yet? Manny Pacquiao versus Juan Manuel Marquez. Did I not say that's the next fight that he's going to have?
I said, we got to talk about this, and we just talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm interested. That is the guy that's given him, you know, more problems than anybody, really.
Yeah, he's one of those people that seems to get better with age, you know. It's a very rare commodity in boxing. Especially at the lighter weights, I think. Juan Manuel has had a very, very decent last few fights, and showed a lot of heart, way more than Mosley showed fighting Manny.
Well, yeah. Here's what worried me a little bit, Marquez. Marquez, when they first fought back in 2004, 7 years ago, Pacquiao was a very green fighter. You know, he didn't, you know, he only really used buzzsaw of a left hand, and you know, he's coming off a big win over Barrera. But he was having trouble with boxers. And after knocking Marquez down 3 times in the first round, you know, Marquez outboxed him for the majority of the remainder of that fight. Then a couple years pass, Marquez is a guy that as he's gotten older, like earlier in his career, he was more about, you know, movement, angles, boxing ability. As he's gotten older, he's had to show a little bit more heart, a little bit more toughness. He's a little easier to hit. In their second fight, once again, a very close fight, I gave it to Pacquiao by 3 points. And Pacquiao landed one devastating shot in that fight, really put Marquez down and had him hurt pretty good. And to the point where Marquez just walked back to the wrong corner. Pacquiao won that in a very close fight. Now, if you look at Marquez since, and I'm not even taking a fight with Floyd Mayweather in there, because Mayweather was obviously a lot bigger, was obviously, you know, he was just a bigger man. But I'm looking more, he had him on how much, he had him in weight, he had him in size. He was a bigger fighter. And he's a faster fighter, too. So, I mean, really, Marquez didn't have much of a chance. But taking a look at it, Marquez's fights that I'm thinking about are his fights with Michael Cassidis and both fights with Juan Diaz. He took a lot of punches in all 3 of those fights. And the only reason he won was because of his heart. I can't see him standing up to that battering from Manny Pacquiao.
I was actually able to get a guy who would only watch MMA to get excited about that Juan Diaz versus Juan Manuel fight. That was epic. I mean, you know, whether you're a boxing fan or not, you watch that fight. You know, you kind of have to set it up with people who don't really normally watch boxing to get them to keep watching it during some of the earlier rounds because you think it's going to be one-sided. But once that comeback starts brewing, that's one of the best fights you can ever watch to get a real appreciation for boxing. But I think it's important to note that, you know, Floyd and Manny are getting to the point where not only now they just keep fighting common opponents, but now we have a situation where Bob Arum and Golden Boy have to make a deal. And it's a situation that should have gotten ugly earlier than it has, you know. If it was going to get ugly, it would have been ugly already, you know, one of those situations. But sounds like these guys are just backs against the wall. They know the Floyd fight's not going to happen. So they're going to sit down and they're going to make this fight happen. And that, to me, just says that, you know, maybe this means that they will be able to eventually work out a deal to get the Floyd fight. I still think it's unlikely, but, you know, it's definitely a matter of, you know, there's a big bone to pick between these two camps. They don't like each other, and they got some bad blood over the Floyd fight not happening the first time they tried to plan it. And there's no talk about, obviously, drug testing or steroids because of the lawsuit. Probably preventing them from even saying anything about that. So it adds a different dynamic. But it all depends on, you know, which Manuel Marquez shows up. You know, that's the big question. And obviously we've seen him fight Floyd, so everybody's going to be trying to compare that fight to this fight. You know, how will Manny do against him? And how did Floyd do against him? Everybody's going to be talking about that after the fact. And that's just going to lead to more people wanting Floyd to fight Manny. So I think you're going to get a situation where these guys are going to have a history now. They've been able to work something out. And after the fight's over, no matter which way it goes, unless Manny loses badly, which I don't see happening, you're going to have people screaming at the top of their lungs this time. That fight to happen if this goes forward. So I'm looking forward to it, no matter what happens. Even if it's a dud. Maybe it's going to pave the way for something better. But we got a pretty decent Friday night fight this weekend, too. ESPN2 in the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. Get Joel Julio, 36-4 with 31 knockouts, fighting Angus Adjaho. 5-5, 14 knockouts. Let's see what we got. There's a lot of odds and ends here for fights. No big title fights, so it seems. Jumping out at me, anyway. Except for this big Bernard Hopkins, Gene Pascal fight. What? They jump into a cardboard box. What's going on?
Yeah, like I was saying, I still say it's going to be very interesting, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and I still say Hopkins has to knock him out to win. I mean, or he's got to beat him so bad that there's no way that the judges could give it to the other guy. I mean, he's literally got to win convincingly 10 of the 12 rounds.
Two. You know, he said that he knows he could win it that way. He knows he doesn't have to knock him out if he beats him very badly. And I think there's a motivation to do that because there is so much bad blood between these two guys. And the way the first one ended is going to inspire him to fight a little bit harder, of course. And I think that's the way he wants to fight this one. He's just going to beat it for 12 rounds. He's not going to be trying for the knockout, but if the knockout comes, it comes. And, you know, I think this is a good fight for him. But it could go either way, you know. It all depends on what kind of training camp both guys have leading up to it and, you know, what happens in the moment. And if it goes to decision and it's anywhere close, it might even depend on where the judges come from. They're all from Canada. Yeah, chances are Bernard's definitely going to lose. But they try to make it so that same mistake isn't repeated this time. And they try to on the undercard, we had light heavyweights Chad Dawson, 29-1, 17 knockouts, fighting Adrian Diacono, 27-2, 15 knockouts. Should be a halfway decent fight. Chad Dawson is one of my favorite jabbers. He's got that pawing jab that's very deceiving. And he starts really shooting it out there harder. It's kind of like hypnotic. And being a guy who lived off my jab when I boxed, that's something I definitely appreciate seeing. And actually, one of the fights that really struck me, at, I don't know the guy's name offhand, but the Friday night fights that I went to out here last time at the Cosmopolitan, I really got to see how a jab can win a fight. One of the undercard fights, and the guy just kept shooting that jab out there, splitting the uprights every time. And it's kind of a shame, you know, being somebody who watches both the mixed martial arts and the boxing, and realizing how far these guys have to go to learn how to fight on their feet and throw punches. It's no more evident than when you watch The Ultimate Fighter. It was like torture watching this last Ultimate Fighter show with, Chris Cope in the last fight of the show last night. Chris Cope was fighting a pure wrestler, Shamar Bailey, and he was doing everything right as far as the wrestling. He was stopping every takedown, but he had the reach on the guy, he had a better jab, and he just wasn't throwing punches. He wasn't confident enough in his boxing to use it, and he would have demolished the guy if he used it, but it actually ended up being a situation where even though he did win the fight, Dana White was screaming, you know, throw your hands. He wasn't listening. And it was kind of disappointing, you know. The other guy thought he won the fight, you know, which I don't know what kind of fight he thought he was in, but it didn't look like a fight. But whenever they were toe-to-toe, it seemed like they would be dancing around each other more than trying to throw punches. And, actually, the guy who was the wrestler who lost the fight was throwing harder shots at different points, but he just wasn't throwing as much. And when they had the action against the cage, the kid with the reach was actually throwing the short hammer-fisted punches on the feet. And so I think that just scored more points, and that's how he won. But it just could have been so much better of a fight, you know, and he could have had so much a much better performance if he knew how to use his jab. It's so important. But one of these days, these MMA guys will figure it out. Maybe they should watch more boxing. We also have a fight going on down in Puebla, Mexico for the WBC Silver Super Flyweight title. We got Oscar Ibarra, 26-4 with 17 knockouts, fighting Wendell Rubilar, 48-16, 7 draws, 23 knockouts. And the interim WBA world minimum weight title also on that card. Between Sammy Gutierrez, 28-5, 19 knockouts, 2 draws, and Juan Palacios, 27-3 with 21 knockouts. Another fight down there in Mexico on Fox between super flyweights Thomas Rojas, 35-12, 23 knockouts, and Juan Jose Montes, 19-1 with 12 knockouts. That's actually that's what these are all on Saturday too. Big titles, big fights. What do we got? No wins. Roy Jones Jr. is fighting in Moscow. You know this?
Yeah, I heard it.
4-7 with 40 knockouts, fighting Dennis Lafayette, 21-1 with 16 knockouts. That'll be a pretty
now, good one. Now, Wolf has enforced his loss to Hopkins last year, right?
Right. Also on this, Nate Campbell is going to Russia. Nate Campbell, 33-8 with 25 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Shirazad Nazarov, 12-4 with 10 knockouts. Comebacker for him, I think. Interesting story. story about Russia, I wanted to mention we could use some visitors to our blog from Russia. I don't know if you noticed our new little feature there. We got that globe with all the dots on it. It tells you where people have been visiting from.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out we need more people in Africa and Russia. Big wide open territory there. You only got like a couple dots in the top of Africa and that part of Russia that Sarah Palin thinks she can see from her house.
Yeah.
We need some viewers from that area. So if you're listening from Russia, just love.
Tell your friends.
Show us some love on the website and check us out. Another quick hit boxing story. I want to mention the Jose Canseco incident took a little bit of a turn and made me realize how stupid people are when it comes to hiring lawyers that don't know what the heck they're doing. I mean, even I know that the basics of filing a lawsuit is you got to give the other guy the paperwork first. And there was a hearing the other day on this $6,500 lawsuit that the celebrity boxing promoter filed against Jose for a breach of contract or whatever else. And of course, Jose doesn't show up, and his brother doesn't either. And the excuse is, oh, well, he wasn't served, so now they have to postpone the hearing. Anybody knows that. I mean, I'm not even a lawyer, and I know that. You got to serve the guy. So I don't know whatever is going to come of that, but apparently the big story that Jose is putting out there is that he was suffering from the loss of his father, and he needed the money to deal with that. And he sent his brother there for whatever reason. Now there's a big stink about, you know, how many other fights does his brother show up for? You never know. But if you want to check out the MMA fights coming up, we don't really have much time to go over those. But check out SureDog.com, go to fights, see those. I just want to kind of throw this out here real quick, see what you think, Tony. There's been so much going on with these different countries in the Middle East, fighting each other, revolutions and all this stuff. I know I always had it at the back of my mind, but what would you think if we did some combat news rather than just combat sports? Do you think that would help the site?
What, like wars and shit?
Yeah.
Whatever, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can talk controversial about anything.
Right. I was thinking maybe we'll start on the weekends because we usually only get the MMA boxing wrestling links on the weekend in the mail. So maybe we do like a weekend warrior call every now and then. We kind of do the wrap up of all the war torn violence going on around the freaking world. And by the way, you know this is the end of the world coming tomorrow, right? Or Saturday.
Yeah, I know. Fuck, they're gonna work this weekend.
You gonna work to the end of the world?
Yeah, I gotta work on Saturday. Just in case the world doesn't end, my ass better be there.
All right. Well, if that guy, if the crazy Christian guy from California, turns out to be wrong, I guess we will be back next week.
Yeah, if the world doesn't end by next week, we'll be back. That would suck. That would be the way my Iron Man streak ended.
The world. No, it's actually supposedly only like 2 million people are going to die or something like that. It's not even like a real end of the world. They're saying that this is going to be the first wave. It's going to be a big earthquake, and then by October, everybody else will be dead. So
okay.
Maybe we'll be on next week, but it'll just be the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Everybody, take precaution and tune in next week, because I have a feeling Rich and I are going to be on. And we better be at the fucking market.
Right.
Damn it, I got tickets to the baseball game on Tuesday for a bobblehead night.
Oh, man.
I don't want to miss that.
End in the world before that.
Yeah. Hey, guys, can you hold up the world ending for at least a week so I can get my bobblehead?
Yeah. Speaking of baseball, too, at least I get to see the Yankees get swept by the Red Sox before the world ends. It does.
There you go.
All right, until next week, folks. Signing off.
Until next week, group. We're out. Later.